Welcome all to today's episode of Right Up Your Algae. I'm your co-host Clara, and I'm ear...
And your ear?
Oh my god.
Who are you ear with?
And I'm here with your other co-host...
Emily.
And today, we are going to be taking a break from our usual topics and diving into the fascinating world of plants. But before we explore the beloved dandelion, let's first understand the differences between the various kingdoms, as they might not be as straightforward as you think. So first we're just going to name them. So there's Archaebacteria, Eubacteria, Fungi, Protista, Plantae, and Animalia. The first three kingdoms that I named are all single-celled organisms. The difference between the three groups are Protozoa are often more complex than the others, so the Protista is often more complex than the Archaebacteria and the Eubacteria. It includes examples like algae. Both bacteria and archaea are a little less complex, and generally speaking, they're classified by which environment they live in. Archaea are thought to live in more extreme environments and are the oldest organisms, while bacteria, although they live in most environments, have more sensitive limits to factors such as temperature and salinity, and whereas archaea generally do not. The animal kingdom is made up of multicellular organisms, which are heterotrophs, meaning that they must feed on other organisms to obtain their energy. Fungi are unlike other kingdoms. You would consider these organisms as things like mushrooms, molds, and mildews and yeast. Generally speaking, they do not photosynthesize, and their cell walls contain chitin. This makes fungi different from plants, as plants typically photosynthesize, and their cell walls contain cellulose. Now, I know that was a lot of information to take in, but just remember that these are, again, generalizations, and there's always exceptions to these rules. So, Emily, do you have any other things to add, or... about those kingdoms or anything like that?
Do you have a favorite? What's your favorite kingdom, Clara?
Fungi.
I guess I should have known.
What a silly question. What's your favorite?
I mean, call me basic. It's got to be Animalia, though.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. And just before we start our episode today, I want to give a shout out to my Nan because it's her birthday today. So happy birthday, Nan.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. And also, if you hear a dog barking in the background, that's my family dog, Parker, and she just likes to bark, so. Today, we're delving into a plant that's not just familiar, but ubiquitous, the dandelion. Part of the genus Taraxacum, these plants are found all over the world, with the most prevalent species in North America being Taraxacum officinale. They're an edible wildflower introduced from Europe, and they have been found on every continent except Antarctica. So let's dive into the dandelion. Dandelions have immense versatility in their ability to grow in different environments, including in urban and rural centers. Dandelions are valued for their antioxidant and antimicrobial properties, diuretic, anti-inflammatory, and antiviral properties. They have been and still are used in herbal medicine, environmental monitoring, and as a food source. The other benefit is the beneficial impacts on soil properties. So first, let's get into the nitty-gritty of the dandelion biology. As a member of the Asteraceae family, dandelions share a botanical lineage with a diverse range of plants. The dandelion has a short stem and long jagged edged basal leaves. Originally, they had the French name Dent de Lion, which translates to lion's tooth because of how the leaves are shaped. One other characteristic of the dandelion is the taproot, which is the main root that can grow up to 2 meters in length. And this makes it difficult to remove the plant from the soil altogether. I don't know if you have done any type of gardening work, you listeners out there, but if you have, you know how frustrating it can be when you pull out a dandelion and then it grows right back in the exact same spot. And that is because you didn't take out the entire taproot. And so the organism can regenerate just from that root. Dandelions are monoecious, meaning that they have both sexes on one plant, so both the male and female parts. They are known for their polyploid nature, ranging from diploid to hexaploidy. This refers to the number of chromosome pairs they have. For example, humans are diploid organisms, and we have 23 chromosomes, but we have 2 of each. And that is the diploid aspect, so two of each chromosome, totaling it as 46, with the exception that the sex chromosome can either be XX or XY for male or for female and male, respectively. Dandelions are generally sterile and do not need fertilization to start seed production. They produce pollen, which does not influence their reproduction. Instead, it is believed that when pollinators come to the plant, it might trigger seed production. While the seeds are maturing, the floret stays lower to the ground to avoid predation or damage, such as like with the mowers and weed whackers. So I don't know if you've seen some dandelions, at least when they grow pretty flat to the ground. Like their whole leaf system will grow really shallow to the ground, and when they're not flowering, they're quite close to the ground, and this is to avoid any type of predation or any type of damage the plant might encounter. The primary seed dispersal method is through wind, due to the morphology of the seed having a pappus, which is like the wispy fibers attached to the seed. So when you blow it, it's like the white part of the seed. And this helps the seed spread and float through wind. Seeds can also disperse through animal secretion. So when they're eaten and the animal digests it and defecates, it can grow from there. And also with water. So if they fall into a stream, they can be moved to another location. According to different legends and some documentation, dandelions have been used since 371 BCE. When Greek scientist Theophrastus recommended that they be used as a tonic to remove freckles and liver spots.
Those pesky freckles.
Yeah, I just love it how like old-timey like scientist people were like, put a frog on your head and you'll be cured.
But Clara, if you eat a walnut, when you have a headache, the headache will go away because it's shaped like a brain. Didn't you know that?
Oh, but of course, that makes the most sense. Dandelions were also documented in traditional medicine in China in the 7th century. However, Arabian traditional medicine using dandelions can be traced back to the 10th century, where they were used against liver and spleen-related diseases. So there is some documentation, but that 10th century kind of use of dandelions is... I found that in literature more often being referred to, but obviously there's been a lot more reference to dandelions in the past and use of dandelions in traditional medicine. In the research, this is what they talk about the most. Different parts of the dandelion are used in traditional medicine to treat urinary infections, pain such as toothaches and menstruation, diabetes, coughs, digestion problems, malaria, and as an anti-inflammatory for ailments like snake bites. For example, people in the Himalayas of India use stems and flowers of dandelions to treat coughs, stomach pain, liver disease, fevers, and as a diuretic. Dandelions were introduced to North America via European exploration. Although the exact date has yet to be discovered, some believe the dandelions could have been brought to North America during the Vikings' time as early as the 11th century, but most believe they came later during stages of European exploration. 1672 marked the first documentation of dandelions in North America. The indigenous peoples of Northwest North America used dandelion latex to remove warts. They also used it to help with liver and kidney ailments, broken bones, and digestion. Another traditional use of dandelions is in cuisine. Dandelion leaves are used in salads and soups. Its roots can be roasted and used in beverages, and its flowers is used in flavoring in different foods like cheese and beverages like wine. Throughout Asian countries, dandelions are used to make salads, pancake fillings, teas, and wedding dishes, and they're also like fried in oil and eaten. In Europe, dandelions were used in times of famine as they provide many vital nutrients. Dandelion roots are a substitute for coffee in different parts of Europe, such as London. And this was a little bit historical, but can also be applied to present day. European countries also use various parts of the plant in pasta, vegetable pies, salads, soups, dandelion honey, which is a mixture of the dandelion flour and sugar, and in risotto, which is, they use both the flowers and the buds. In one location in Switzerland, dandelions are an essential species, and their flower are essential for ingredients used to make jams and in salads. And this was, there's a whole paper kind of written about this one place in Switzerland who specifically use the flowers for making jams. Since dandelions spread quickly through Eurasia, their uses in other continents came much later. And so I'm just talking about parts of Asia and Europe. Therefore, once their edibility and other properties were discovered, they became more prevalent in North American culture. They were used as food by indigenous peoples of Northwest North America, and the use of dandelions in North America is similar to other countries due to the influence brought over by European countries. Dandelions are so popular because of their nutrients and their health benefits. They produce secondary metabolites known as flavonoids, which are a known antioxidant. These antioxidant properties make dandelions a suitable herbal medicine and can help with oxidative stresses on the body, such as preventing cardiovascular diseases. The stem extract has a high concentration of caffeic acid, which can protect against some waves of ultraviolet light, meaning there's potential use for it in skincare. Dandelions could, in some cases, potentially help reduce diabetes symptoms through their production of compounds such as caffeic acid that can stimulate insulin secretion from the pancreas cells and others that act similarly to anti-diabetic drugs currently being used to treat type 2 diabetes. Chicoric acid is another prominent part of the dandelion plant found within all parts of the plant. It exhibits anti-inflammatory responses in the body, which may help to reduce chronic gut diseases. Another potential use of the extracts from dandelion leaves is as an anti-cancer agent. And I thought this research was super interesting, using it to create cell death, but use it from like the extracts in the dandelion plant, which I just thought was like kind of bizarre.
So was this like just tested on like, I guess like in vitro, you know, like.
Yeah. I believe it was in vitro. I know they've moved on to a lot of studies with like mice and rabbits and stuff like that. But I'll talk about that a little bit like in a couple minutes, just how they're using different organisms and what they're using them to test.
Okay.
Yeah. Although this is still a novel area of research, the polysaccharides, a natural form of carbohydrate, isolated from the dandelion leaves, may exhibit the ability to provoke cell death. Research is being done on extracting many chemical compounds from taxicum, including trepins, phenols, and flavonoids. And we talked about the flavonoids a little bit earlier as an antioxidant. And this is all for the pharmaceutical industry. The studies on the compound extracts are currently being performed on mice, rabbits, and guinea pigs to look for anti-fatigue, effects on blood cells, liver, anti-cancer, anti-obesity, anti-diabetic, hypolipidemic, and antioxidant properties. So they're being used for a lot of different things. And to me, I always think about when, again, like referring back in time when people would say one plant cures everything. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting to me that it's like a common plant that grows in your garden and mm-hmm. we all just like kind of think of it as a pest. Mm-hmm. And it can have so many beneficial effects when used properly. In modern science, the common dandelion has a potential to be used as a biomonitor. So biomonitors are a way to examine environmental conditions. Ideal biomonitors are plentiful, easy to collect, and grow in many environments. In last week's news episode, we talked about using invertebrates as a biomonitor for freshwater systems. However, there are also many other examples of using different organisms as a biomonitor. The common dandelion is a perfect candidate for a biomonitor as it is widespread. There are limited amounts of exchange between the roots and the leaves in the dandelions for heavy metals, which makes the roots good indicators of soil contamination and the leaves a good indicator for air pollution. Dandelions have therefore been used to measure heavy metals such as lead, mercury, and cadmium. And I just wanted to quickly refer to one last study before we end today's episode. So this was a study that looked at crop rotation with sugar beets and rubber dandelions. And so crop rotation is just planting one crop one year and then the next year in that same plot of land, or a few years later, planting a different crop. So this just helps to improve some different soil properties. So in this study, they found that with crop rotation of sugar beet and rubber dandelion, there is an increase in the soil microbial populations, and there's also beneficial impacts on the soil characteristics, including soil quality and soil fertility. And I'll be including a diagram of the results from their study on our Instagram for any of you guys who just want to take a look at it. It's a good visualization. One thing I noticed in their diagram is they said there was a decrease in the AMF populations,
mm-hmm.
which was interesting. And I would like to dive a little bit more into that because I know mm-hmm. we've talked about AMF, and just as a refresher, it stands for arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi. I would like to look into why exactly that was. So to summarize today's episode, dandelions are important culturally as a traditional medicine and cuisine. Dandelions have the potential to be incorporated into modern medicine as they possess anti-diabetic, anti-inflammatory, anti-cancer, and antioxidant properties, among many other things that we've already talked about. Also, dandelions can be used in environmental health assessments as a biomonitor, which is beneficial for understanding environmental contamination. And lastly, we talked about it being used in crop rotations to help with different soil properties, and I just thought it was interesting that even with like one crop rotation, I know they only did the study for 2 years, you can really see an increase in different soil chemistry properties and actually different microbial populations. Although this common weed does get out of control in our lawns, there are many valuable uses for this wildflower instead of just tossing it in the compost bin like I so frequently do. There needs to be a shift in society's mindset. Instead of deeming this perennial a weed or an annoyance, we should consider the benefits of this edible wildflower. And hopefully it's convinced you to go out and harvest some of those dandelion flowers and use it in some of these different cuisines. And that's all I have, so no trivia today. Sorry, guys. Kind of slacked on that.
What's that? Do you hear that, Clara? Do you hear that sound? Do you know what that means? Right whale watch. This week we have some very good right whale news coming straight to us from the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada. On the 10th of July, the Campobello Whale Research Team, supported by DFO and other scientist groups, responded to an entanglement of a North Atlantic right whale located near Rimouski? I don't know where Rimouski is. Or Rimouski.
No. No idea.
Presumably coastal, if there was a right whale there.
Well, I would hope.
The team were able to disentangle the whale and attach a satellite transmitter to track its progress and movement, and as of right now, it seems like it's doing okay.
Yay!
Woo-hoo.
Oh, and also, I know this isn't the right whale watch, but I know in our news episode we talked about the minke whale, and then again there was another whale that washed up on the beach, the humpback whale,
yes.
And sadly, he passed away.
Yes. So, if you listen to our last Biosphere Bulletin, the same tidal bore rafting team actually came across a humpback whale, less than 2 weeks later. And unfortunately, that whale was just too far in. It wasn't able to get back out to ocean like the minke whale was. And I had seen some, I was like looking at the comments of like the news article on Facebook, and I had a lot of people putting a lot of blame on the tidal bore rafting crew. I just wanted to say there's absolutely nothing they could have done. And they had made it very clear that they had called the appropriate response teams in that situation. So, unfortunately, this just happens sometimes. Mm-hmm. But they did everything right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just make sure to go check out our Instagram page so you can see some of the different photos I'll be posting from a few of the different articles that I read. And that's at Write Up Your Algae Podcast. And email us with any questions that you might have or anything that you found wrong about this episode. Maybe you know more about dandelions than I do and you just want to give a correction. So that's at ruyapodcast@outlook.com. So that's ruyapodcast@outlook.com. And yeah. Emily, any questions before we end today's episode?
I think you just about covered it.
All right. Awesome. So hope you all enjoyed. And we hope today's episode was
Right Up Your Algae.